This is Hidden Killers Week in Review.
A look back at the most prolific stories of the week.
This is the Hidden Killers Podcast with Tony Bruschi and continuing coverage of the case against Brian Koberger.
There's this fantasy we all like to believe that if something we really, really think might be wrong with our kid, we would know it, right? We would just spot on, boom, here's what we can do about it. Well, that's what a lot of people who don't have kids think. And even some people with kids think, especially if you've had an easy kid. But not all kids are easy, and there's a lot of you out there that know that. Some people would think the signals would be obvious, like flashing hazard lights, but what if they're not? What if they're subtle? What if they're odd enough to notice, but never quite loud enough to confront? Or you just don't know how to confront them because they're just that odd. And you talk to experts, and you talk to psychologists, and you talk to therapists, and you just kind of do what you think you can do, but at the end of the day, it's you versus a broken brain. What if by the time you do notice, it's already far, far too late? That's the reality we're staring down in the wake of Brian Koberger, a guy from a so-called normal family, and from by all understanding they were, a kid raised with structure, with siblings, with middle-class opportunities, no obvious trauma, no glaring abuse, just off, socially disconnected, emotionally disconnected, psychologically drifting, and nobody really knew how bad it was until the bodies were cold. In this conversation, retired FBI Special Agent Jennifer Coffendaffer and I dig into that side of the story, the part that doesn't fit cleanly into criminal profiles, the part that starts long before a crime scene inside the silent corners of a child's mind. We're talking about the generational shift in parenting, about the kids who get lost between work, schedules, screen time, and the slow erosion of connection. And we ask a brutally honest question. What can you actually do when your kid just doesn't connect to the world the way others do? This isn't about blaming parents. It's not about making villains out of middle-class families who worked their asses off to give their kids a good life. It's about the painful truth that sometimes it's not enough. Because sometimes even when you do everything right, it still goes terribly, irreversibly wrong. We'll talk about that emotional split, that sense of disassociation so many mass murderers seem to carry from a young age. The warmth they want, but can't absorb. The connection they crave, but can't sustain. The family's trying desperately to reach them. And the digital void that reaches back louder. And most of all, we talk about the sheer helplessness of spotting something that you can't actually fix. I want you to let me know what your thoughts are in the comment section on YouTube. If you're not already there, if you're listening to us on the podcast platforms, hit subscribe there, but do check out our YouTube channel. Just search Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi to be part of that there. And then hit subscribe on YouTube as well. We want to hear your thoughts on this case. So I opened up the conversation with Jennifer by asking the question that haunts every parent, every teacher, every person who's ever seen a kid they just didn't quite understand. When a child disconnects from the world, when they don't show red flags, but the lights are clearly dimming, what the hell are we supposed to do?
Yeah, it's, I think, such a difficult line, right? It's a difficult line. Ramsland actually talked about it very recently, how most of the people who go through her classes, they are fascinated, some even fixated on true crime, on murders, on that psychology of it. But the grand majority become prosecutors or you know, in law enforcement. They don't become mass murderers or serial killers, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's the exact point you're saying. Mm-hmm. And I really think the only people that really know are the parents.
Yeah.
The people that are around them all the time. And sadly, I think we live in a world that switched over maybe after our generation of parents where, and I'm included in this, where you have parents that aren't at home, where you have both parents working to make ends meet, to try to provide a better life than they had for their kids. And then what you have are children that are completely starting at a very young age, unsupervised, if they are supervised, they're supervised by a babysitter. And the connection between the parents and the child has been lost in some ways. I really believe this. You know, I'm in a huge social experiment myself with my family. My husband and I retired so that we could raise our youngest from the age of six on, walking him to the school bus, doing everything with him, right? He's 17 now. And then our other kids, who we both had huge jobs, working a gazillion hours, 80 hours a week, traveling out of town, and had to entrust, certainly other than when they were at school, their care to a professional au pair or nanny. And right now that professional au pair and nanny are doing pretty good because both of those kids are fine. You know what I mean? But you have to make that connection when you're there. That means every second you're there, you're with that kid. So your child, so they know how much they love you. And I think so many parents aren't like that. You look back at, for instance, the shooters in Littleton, Klebold and Harris. I mean, completely disassociated with their parents. You look at Brian Koberger, completely dissociated with his parents. All of these individuals seem dissociated with their parents. Bundy's mother, as I recall, was truly his sister. And he didn't find that out till later, right? His parents were really his grandparents, as I recall. So there is this disassociation, it seems, from a very early age with the predominant numbers of these people with their parents. Dahmer's another great example. I'm just touching on the ones that I've personally studied.
Yeah. And that's so true, because people, I mean, children, everyone wants to find some sort of acceptance, some sort of community, some sort of group that they belong to. It's what we do. And it seems when you have parents, I mean, and I'm not faulting it. I mean, I work my butt off. Luckily, I'm in my house, so I get to see my daughter all the time. But I'm always working. And there's tons of people who are always working because you got to make the ends meet. And I think sometimes, especially when you're out of the house, it can be hard to always be that person that's going to be there when they really need you, because you only have so much energy and so much time as well. And it's easy to sometimes miss some of those places and pieces where the kids are really reaching out, not necessarily in an obvious way, for acceptance, for love, for attention, for that reassurance that things will be okay, to keep them on a track. But unfortunately, when that's not in existence, we go to this. And then we get online, and I'm holding up a phone if you're listening to the podcast, or we go to the message board, or we go to whatever, social media. And obviously, Koberger did exactly that. He wasn't finding that sort of warmth with his family. And I'm not faulting his family, because I don't think anyone could have shown him the warmth that he needed. I don't think his brain was capable of receiving it. But he was looking for it. He thinks he knew that he wanted it. He knew he had it at one point in time. And eventually, he found it online. And as far as we know, it started out with that that message board, that community, talking about Visual Snow and other people going, yeah, I can recognize it. I can hear you there. And then that kind of began this path of looking at things differently, or finding a place of his voice being accepted, being able to say, I treat my dad like crap, and I don't know why. I feel like people are in meat suits. And all the things that he wrote about, just dehumanizing basically everyone around him, I don't think it was necessarily because he wanted to be evil, but that's how his mind worked. That's how he saw people from a very, very young age, and nobody knew it until eventually we look back at message boards 10 years later. I mean, people need to get in front of this. Parents need to get in front of this. But I don't know how on earth we change any of that. You'll have to rewire parents or start teaching kids from a very young age, hey, when you get to be parents, you got to be looking out for this in your kids. I don't know how we get there.
Yeah. And you know why? I like your point you're bringing up about when you look at many of the other siblings that were siblings of mass murderers and, you know, serial killers, they're all normal. Mm-hmm. I mean, from the standpoint of they're not, you know, going out and doing those types of crimes. So your point is well received, I think, that that's just how he was wired. I really believe the people that are this evil mm-hmm. and this psychotic, they are wired that way. So it doesn't matter if they had the perfect, you know, what in their eyes would have been the perfect world or not. Mm-hmm. They would have likely ended up this way. That's how I believe. Mm-hmm. I'm not talking about those in the gang life as an example.
Sure, that's a different world. You know, yeah.
It's a different world, but they end up doing the same sort of things. They mm-hmm. really become serial killers.
Yeah.
They kill all the time in all sorts of different instances. They don't care. They have no empathy for life. So they also become serial killers, but I think they are made. Mm-hmm. These guys who come from, you know, quote unquote, a normal, pretty normal background, with no red flags, their siblings are doing great. The normal issues you have, right? Mm-hmm. But, you know, I know his parents went through a couple bankruptcies. You know, his dad was, I think, worked not in the janitorial side, but in the mechanical side of the mm-hmm. school. But, you know, great middle class family from all accounts that didn't mistreat him in any way. And look at what happened. So I agree with you. It's deep-rooted and nothing you can probably ever spy.
Well, and the thing is, what kind of resources exist for parents like this? And you have a kid, you got other kids, and everybody seems happy and healthy, and you're raising your son the same way. And I mean, that's just the assumption I'm making here. And he's just off, and there seems to be nothing you can do to fix or change this. Yes, there's psychologists. Yes, there's therapists. Very limited if you don't have a lot of money. And if you do, even then, still can be a bit limiting. On what's out there in terms of an overall overarching, this is how we're going to function as a whole, as a society, to help you get where you need to go. It's very kind of one-off. Okay, for this 1 hour a week, we're going to talk over here and hope this is going to fix everything. That seems to not work very well with some of these minds. And as a parent, you don't have a lot of resources or any sort of anything you can do if you have a kid that has these sort of issues, other than, well, let's try and get them help. But quite often, you're just kind of got your hands tied and hope to God that the kid doesn't go do something horrible while under your watch.
Yeah, it's such a low percentage, as we've discussed.
Yeah.
People who commit these types of crimes, can it be spotted? I'm not really sure, because I think there's a lot of people who show dissociative and psychotic and narcissistic and
nothing's done with them, though. That's the thing. I mean, I think it's easy to be spotted. I don't think spotting is the problem. It's admitting there's a problem, I think, is the biggest problem in society. I could walk through a store today and probably go boom, 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 and probably have a pretty high batting average. But at the end of the day, when you go and talk to those folks, what percentage even recognize there's a problem? What percentage, if they do recognize a problem, have any sort of solution or direction to get a problem? And how many have just kind of given up and said, well, that's who I am? I think those are probably the three main responses you'll get, and a lot of hopelessness and helplessness out there in society until things get really bad. We only talk about the ones that go and kill a bunch of people. We don't talk about necessarily the ones who are making life a living hell for themselves and everyone else until people die or go off and get into other horrible things that are more so kind of one-offs and kind of not necessarily a direct factor of that sort of behavior, but more so an indirect factor of that behavior and the unhealthy way of living, which so many people are living in.
Yeah, no, you're right, Tony. But I guess what I'm saying is, of all those people, of the millions mm-hmm. of people likely that have these issues that we're discussing,
sure.
almost none decide to, you know, shoot up a school
yeah.
or become a serial killer. So that's the issue, right? In
yeah.
other words, they're living this horrible existence and the people around them are having to tolerate it or to put up with it. But because it never usually gets out of control from that standpoint of the physical violence, it's sort of ignored and then it just carries on.
So here's where we're left, staring straight into the uncomfortable gray space between something felt off and he murdered four people. Because if there's one thing this conversation makes clear, it's that Brian Koberger didn't spring out of nowhere. He didn't just snap. This wasn't some last-minute descent into darkness. This was a slow, methodical unraveling. And while no one could have predicted the exact outcome, the disconnection, the emotional void, it was there for years. Maybe forever. Jennifer hit the nerve perfectly. This isn't about the 1% who go on to commit atrocities. It's about the millions living in emotional purgatory, trapped inside their own psychological static. They won't all become killers. Most won't. But that doesn't mean they're okay. That doesn't mean the people around them are okay. And it sure as hell doesn't mean we should ignore the ticking clock just because it hasn't gone off yet. What really struck with me here was the idea that spotting the problem isn't actually the issue. We do see it. We just don't know what to do with it. The resources barely exist. The access to help, expensive, limited, underdeveloped. And the denial, widespread. Parents, school systems. We all like to believe it's just a phase. He's just quirky. It's a little off. I was a little off too. It's okay. Until it's not. And then we ask how it happened, when the truth is it was happening right in front of us the whole damn time. This isn't about panic. It's about presence. It's about being close enough to notice when something's not landing right. And being honest enough to say, this might be more than I can handle alone. Because the next Koberger, he's not wearing a villain cape. He's in a group chat. He's in a high school hallway. He's sitting alone in the cafeteria, stewing in resentment and confusion. And if no one sees him, really sees him, he's going to look for someone who does. Even if that someone is a message board full of rage and narcissism and nihilism. So where does that leave us? Hopefully, just a little more awake. A little more willing to act before the obituary. Because until we build a world where we take these quiet, broken signals seriously, not just after the crime, but before the crash, we'll keep having these conversations. And as much as I appreciate you being here for this one, I'd like a future where we don't have to keep having them. Not like this, anyway. Tell me your thoughts in the comment section on YouTube. If you're listening to us on iHeart, on Apple Podcasts, on Spotify, wherever it may be sure to press subscribe there as well. We even have a premium channel on Apple Podcasts, True Crime Today Premium Plus, where you can get access to all of our episodes before they're released to the public. You get them in advance. Same thing on YouTube. We got a very similar program for you right there. So wherever you like to get your stuff, it's two different ones, but you can get access to things in advance and ad-free when you sign up to be premium members of the show, either on YouTube or on Apple Podcasts. So do check that out. At the very least, hit subscribe. Okay? Appreciate all of that. Thank you guys so much. We'll talk again very, very soon.
Want true crime coverage all day, every day? Press subscribe now to the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today and get the latest cases delivered right to your feed.